I think it's key to understand that no business is about one person. It's about a team of people. It's about a culture. It's about a common belief that whatever the task at hand is, we're going in the right direction. And understanding that there's a way to approach leadership or colleagues with respect and dignity if you feel it's not going in the right direction, and adding a positive impact to be heard. And I think when you're in a position of leadership and you give the employees the opportunity to speak to you and shed the light on what could be better or different for that organization, and you truly take that under counsel and adopt some of those policies and ideas, it builds a great conviction amongst everybody that team here.
Today, my guest is Mike Holloway, president and founder of Spirence, and also the founder of Futures Recovery Healthcare and chief investment officer of GMH Communities. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you for having me.
Great having you on here.
It's great to be on with you, Laura.
So let's talk resilience, something that you are certainly no stranger to with 14 years leading behavioral health organizations. And resilience has become such a buzzword in leadership circles and in cultures. What does that word mean to you?
When you hear the word resilience, I think most people would think about toughness, right? And they would look at how tough a person is and maybe judge resilience by that outer toughness. And to me, that's far missing the mark. I think resilience is basically being flexible and knowing when it's time to be tough, but also when it's time to be vulnerable and to show your true side of humanity to your staff, right? And I think the more you could do that and be yourself, then the more resilient you become throughout life. It's really not a magic answer. It's more of just, you know, making sure that people understand that you are human as well, and you're going to make mistakes, but being resilient is about working together as a group to overcome those mistakes so that your team doesn't feel, you know, nervous to make a mistake. People need to be free to make decisions. And if they see the leader of the organization say it's okay to make a mistake and also to be human, I think that helps build resilience.
Well, yeah. And having worked for you for 10 years, I can definitely say humility is one of your redeeming qualities as a leader.
Oh, thank you.
Having that. So talk about your journey in learning what you just shared, right? Like how to be vulnerable, how to model that for the people that you manage and the companies that you build. I mean, were you just born that way out of the gate?
I don't know. I don't know if I was born that way. I would say that, you know, it's a mixture of family dynamic for sure. I'm blessed to have an amazing family. Obviously, it doesn't come without our challenges as a family, which we all have. But just loving and supporting parents, siblings that are absolutely phenomenal, and you know, a wife that's supportive as well. Having grown up in that kind of loving environment, I think teaches you a lot about how you should act as a human being. And I think that, you know, you tend to follow the example of your parents and the peers that you surround yourself with. I also would say, like, and look, I think for all the listeners out there, everybody has their own beliefs. Faith's big to me as well, right? And I think having a faithful, you know, outlook on life and having a faith that I could turn to helps me understand, you know, how you should treat people. And I think that then helps build resilience within a company.
Well, and have you gone through periods where you kind of lose faith and you question if you are going to bounce back? Because behavioral healthcare is no joke.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I ever lose faith, but I certainly have been kicked and down, right? And I feel like there's been times where you want to quit and where you want to, you know, just say, this is too hard. Why are we doing this? You know, it's because especially in behavioral healthcare, you're giving your heart and soul to not only the patients, but their families, and then also to your supporting cast, right? Your staff. You've heard me say it. When you walk through those doors, it's, you know, check all your baggage at the doors, even though we're all human beings and we have it, you're going in to help somebody who's in need, and this is your job, right? So to ask that of so many people is a difficult ask. So it's very easy sometimes to sit there and say, why are we doing this? And, you know, there's easier things that we could do in life. But at the same time, I think the reward far outweighs the challenges when you, you commit to that faith of saying, we could get to the other side of this.
Well, and you do say that all of the time at Futures, is to the staff, you know, we check our baggage at the door, and you always acknowledge that that's not easy to do. And I do think that that's one of the many things that you've done as a leader that have shaped the culture. Are there other things that you want our audience to know, or things that you've learned or recognized about yourself that you feel have had a big positive or negative impact on a company's culture?
I would tell you, and I probably get this mostly from my mother, but I think engaging in meaningful conversation with people who work with you and work for you is crucial, right? Like knowing people's names, understanding, you know, that they're human and that they have a life outside of these walls, and asking meaningful questions about how their life is going, right? How's their family? And it may not always be great, the feedback that you get, but, you know, taking that moment to really sit down and ask them and look them in the eyes and listen, right? Not just asking to ask, I was always taught as a crucial thing to build trust from folks, right? And you're not doing it just to do it. You're doing it because you really care. And I think that then opens up this great relationship between not only me and the folks, but between them together, because they see that conversation's easier to have. And, you know, it tends to break down the barriers and the walls and build some level of trust and you know, realness to the relationships.
Yeah. And I do notice also you're always encouraging positivity, and, you know, and it's not in a toxic way. Mm-hmm. It's just that it's much easier to walk through the hard things when you are in a positive headspace. So talk to me about that. Is that challenging for you sometimes? And where do you go to kind of get your energy shifted?
Yeah. It's like
when you're not in a
positive
headspace.
When you wake
headspace.
Up in the morning and you slap yourself in the face 15 times.
Right? Like, is that
let's
what you
go
do?
Game time. No. No, it's not that at all. It's like, it's just, again, I think it goes back to the reality that it's just life, right? Like you can't change what happened already. You can learn from it. You're not going to know what's going to happen in the future. But if you could stay, and believe me, I'm working on this every day. If you could stay as much in the present and understanding that the decisions you're making today are the best decision that you can make, and you're just going to live with the consequences, right? And as long as you do, I always operate that as long as you do what's best for the people around you, the company, and you're making moral and ethical decisions and working hard, the rest will take care of itself, right? And if you could believe that, then you got to just see what happens on the other end.
Yeah, you also talk a lot about how resilient organizations are.
Yeah,
I love when you talk about that because I think people can't hear that enough. So talk about some lessons that you've learned there and really understanding the big picture of business. And
I think it's key to understand that, you know, no business is about one person. It's about, you know, a team of people. It's about a culture. It's about a common belief that whatever the task at hand is the right, we're going in the right direction. And understanding that there's a way to approach leadership or colleagues with respect and dignity if you feel it's not going in the right direction, and adding a positive impact to be heard. And I think when you're in a position of leadership and you give the employees the opportunity to speak to you and shed the light on what could be better or different for that organization, and you truly take that under counsel and, you know, adopt some of those policies and ideas, it builds a great conviction amongst everybody that, you know, we're a team here. And it's not a dictatorship. I always say we have 200 people working down at Futures, right? That's 200 brilliant minds that we better be tapping, right? It's not two or three people making decisions and the rest are just following. It's everybody has ideas. We might as well tap into that. And I think that's a key to organizational success. Now, how you define success is something different, but organizational success of creating a good place to work.
Yeah, I would also add to that a culture of excellence. That's something that, as an employee of yours, I have seen you build. I've seen you, and I think that comes too from a person and the way that that leader is built and what that leader has learned. So where was that modeled for you, just building a culture of excellence? And what does that even mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just, it comes from, you know, 45 years of being around people that have exemplified that. You know, I think everybody has their own different conscious internally. And when you see something that doesn't feel right or look right, and it feels bad to you, you kind of know how you're wired. So again, it's just about having experiences throughout life that say, you know, that is how you treat people or that's not how you treat people. And being on the opposite end of it through, you know, schooling and athletics and other jobs, you could see how it made you feel as a human being, right? And what I responded well to versus what I didn't respond well to, and then just carrying those characteristics forward. And again, like I said, everything we're talking about today, I'm by no means perfect at, right? I'm constantly working on them. And I think a huge part of that too, Laura, is being able to, and I try to teach my kids this because I'm constantly messing up around my kids, is being able to admit when you're wrong and telling them, look, to my kids, dad messes up too, right? Like, it's okay to mess up, but I got to admit that I messed up and I'm sorry for that and I'm going to fix that, right? And then no different than the relationship with employees and colleagues. I think it's very, very crucial to be able to say, I screwed up, I'm sorry, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, you definitely hold yourself to a high standard, both as a human being and as a professional, and you also care as a professional, and that can get heavy.
Sure.
So how do you stay balanced? I mean, how do you, like, when you're feeling the weight of things, mm-hmm. if a situation is happening at work or at home or at the same time, what grounds you, what keeps you balanced that you can share with our
audience? Yeah. I mean, I have a couple things. As of late, last 2-3 years, and you were one of the, I would say, catapults towards this, is I see a therapist. You know, I go talk to somebody once a month, and it's phenomenal. I never did that in my life, ever.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I'm 45 years old now. I don't think I started seeing him until 42 or 43. And I'm sitting there saying, I've spent the last, you know, decade and a half of my life helping people, helping families, you know, get help that they need, you know, and, you know, again, I'm not the best servant leader, but I kind of categorize myself as a servant leader. So I'm constantly trying to help people, sometimes to the neglect of my own family, right? And my wife would laugh at that too. But I just want to help people. And I think it's important for people to understand that you have to help yourself too, because you can't be any help to other people unless you're working on yourself, right? So number one is being able to go and talk to somebody that's a complete third party, has zero skin in the game, but is just a sounding board for the craziness that's going through my head, right? and then him looking at me, telling me, like, you're not that crazy. You know, it's pretty cool. So you could talk very freely about that. I highly encourage that. I think it's important for people. I think that stigma has been around for a really long time, that, like, you're a weak human being if you have to go get that type of counseling. I disagree. I strongly disagree. Number two is find something that, like, that keeps you refreshed, right? And I think the physical element of that is really, really important. I love to work out. If I miss working out for a week, I could tell my whole center balance is off, right? From my mind down to just the way I process thoughts. So staying consistent with whatever that is for somebody, whether it's taking walks or going to the gym or, you know, playing tennis or whatever it may be, yoga, right? Meditation. I think, you know, I'm not a big meditator by any means.
You doing yoga?
No, I am not. I'm just trying.
When did this start?
It did not. Although I might try it.
I gotta see this.
Yeah, my downward dog is probably. No, but I think, you know, I think finding the thing that works for that person from a physical perspective is crucial.
Well, and then you touched on family mm-hmm. and work-life balance. How have you managed that? Because, you know, we mentioned you are the founder of Spearance, president of Spearance. You are the founder of Futures Recovery Healthcare, chief investment officer of GMH. And under that umbrella is multiple other companies not even mentioned. So how do you juggle it all and how do you prioritize? Because I think that could be really helpful for people to hear tips on that.
Mental health challenges make up 10% of workplace healthcare costs and lead to billions in lost productivity each year. Traditional employee assistance programs were created to help address these challenges. However, they are often underutilized because they are focused on reactive solutions instead of proactive solutions. That's why we created Spearance, to prioritize mental wellness in order to prevent mental illness. Spearance's science-backed platform offers an extensive and continually growing library of mental health courses crafted and delivered by clinical experts. The platform also features live events, interactive coaching, on-demand support tools, and dedicated support for managers. Our approach results in over 800% higher utilization than traditional EAPs. The world is moving towards proactive care, and Spearance is leading the way. Spearance, the future of workplace mental health.
It's not easy. I mean, I don't think I have an answer for anybody that's going to be this magic wand, but I will tell you that I have a boy who just turned 15, or I'm sorry, just turned 16. He got his driver's permit. And I have a daughter who's 14. They're 19 months apart. And I got a lovely wife married almost 18 years now. I would say that I have not always put them first. And I think that over the last few years, I've really tried to do that. So first and foremost, like, my family is first. And I rarely miss games for my kids. You know, I make that at a point. So if I have to work when they're in bed at night and do some things to do that, I'll just do that, right? Or if I have to get up earlier to get stuff done. But being there for them during those sporting events is important to them and it's important to me. Not saying I make everything, but I do my best to make that a part. And then, you know, just trying to understand that work is about obviously being a great example for the people you work with, but also understanding that the people you work with can carry some of that bag, right? So it's, you can't do everything yourself. You can't be the one and all for organizations. That's why you have a team, right? So it's being able to delegate and believe in your team and giving people the full reign and control to make decisions and mess up, right? And learn from those things and move on together. So it's not a perfect thing. It's something that I'm still working on. I think another thing too, Laura, which I find some weeks I do it and some weeks I don't, and I'm much more productive on the weeks that I do it, is planning ahead for the week, right? Is getting up, maybe it's on a Sunday evening or a Monday morning, fresh cup of coffee, and looking at the entire schedule and understanding, okay, this is where I have to be there for my kids and my wife, right? And this is where these are the crucial meetings I need to be a part of, and planning around that. So you're not going to bed every night trying to hodgepodge it together and stress. And now you're moving your schedule the next day completely. So those are some of the little things that I'm trying to work on. But I got a far way to go.
Yeah. I will say though, you model that really well as a leader, is putting your family first. You've always said that too. Maybe if you weren't doing it, you know, obviously you would know that, we wouldn't know that, but you've always said that to us, that family first, and you're always very supportive as a leader when your employees need to put their family first. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's definitely something I thought that our listeners could really learn from you, kind of the magic behind how you do it, because although it might be a moving target for you and feel that way for you, it does translate to your culture.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think, like, I pick it up from other people too, right? So whereas you're saying, you know, I do a decent job of emulating that to folks that work with me, I'm picking that up from other people. I'm picking that up from folks that I work with, and I see, you know, a little bit. So it's not me that's defining this magic, as you call it. There is no magic. It's just kind of learning from each other, right? And trying to figure out how we all could help each other with different ideas and thoughts on how to be that way.
Well, yeah. And it's operating from a non-fear-based perspective too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because like you mentioned your faith, and if you're leading from the faith perspective, it's, I'm going to put my family first and everything will be okay.
Yep.
on the business side, because
that's right.
And you absolutely do model that. So
oh, thank you.
What other thoughts do you have on work-life balance? Because business today is moving faster than ever. There's more pressure than ever on organizations. So what other thoughts do you have on how employees can maintain work-life balance?
This is one that I think is like still defining itself in what I'll call post-COVID world. I think it's, and coming from somebody who runs and operates companies, and you could appreciate this with your, you know, co-founder experience at Spirence. Work-life balance, we stress, especially as mental health companies. But at the same time, over the last couple of years, that pendulum has swung so far to the left that it's like, what about the company, right? So, you know, we all sit here and we can talk about mental health and making sure you put your family first and work from home. And why do I only one day work from home instead of 5 days work from home? And, you know, I don't want to travel anymore. And, you know, all this other stuff. And then you got a company here that is trying to make it so that you can continue to grow as a company and employ more people. And where's the balance, right? So it's like finding that balance. And I think you've done a great job with that too, because I know how much work-life balance is to you, like your kids, right? And how much you want to be a mom first. But understanding that how important you are to the organization, you can't just leave it all.
And check out.
Check out, right? So it's about finding those like little things of, first of all, communication with the company and, you know, your partners or your direct supervisors to say, look, these are the things that are important to me to keep me sane, right? To keep me kind of balanced. How can you help me achieve those things so that I could give you 110% of my time? Because it's a partnership. But I think that I truly do think that, that this COVID period has created this huge imbalance between, you know, company expectations and employee expectations. And I think that, you know, certain companies are doing a better job of modeling what that partnership could look like. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't mean you don't have to work.
Right.
I mean, and that's just really tough, especially in the younger generations. They are attracted to the easier, seemingly easier professions. Like there's some research study that shows that like 70% want to become content creators, which is fine, but I mean, that there's a freedom in that.
Oh, great. You know, tell them to come work for Spirence.
Exactly. That's perfect. Come on, we'll take all of you. Yeah, but no, I think to your point, it's about mindfulness.
Right.
And just being mindful every day about the priorities. And it's such a cliche, but it's so true of working smarter instead of harder. It's like easy to get stuck in a hypervigilance of where you're just working to work. You know, but does time really need to be invested here?
Yep.
Or does it need to be invested here? We'll get more out of that. And then I can be finished at 4:30 to go take my kids to practice or whatever.
Yeah. It's about like accountability, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we all have a job for a reason, right? There's roles within every company for a reason. And those roles should be clearly defined as to what this person is hired for. And that comes with accountability on what their work product should be. I could care less if somebody wants to leave at 4 o'clock because they have a huge game for their kid, if they're going to get that accountability check the box.
You always say that.
That's important.
Yep.
But I think on the flip side, people have to understand that now when we have a talk about accountability, we have real things to look at, right? So I don't care if you needed to go do that. In fact, I want you to go do that and be there for your family. But let's not be afraid to talk about accountability. And I think that's the balance that is happening in a lot of companies, but needs to continue to happen. You know, it's funny, real quick, I want to add, like, and you've seen this because I've heard this from you. You're on the front lines of selling Spirence, you know, company Laura and I co-founded, to businesses, right? And I think one of the biggest pieces of feedback you've heard from companies is, do you have good content on getting people to return to work, right? Getting people to get back in the office, which is why we're building that out now.
Right.
Right. So it's clearly this huge dynamic in today's world.
Yeah, people are bucking it because they want to keep their freedom. That feels like freedom to them, but there are skills that you can learn to create freedom within the structure.
Right.
You know, right. it's about the education and learning skills.
And also freedom can come with go start your own company. And
make right, it, right. make, oh my gosh.
It, right, make it look like whatever you want. But also, you know, you could have that freedom within a company if you have accountability.
Well, yes. And one other thing that you mentioned that I want to dig in on are difficult conversations.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you're very good at those and you encourage those and you lean into those. And that makes a big difference in conversations like this with people you manage or just, I think, generally even to the audience.
Yeah.
Do you naturally lean into difficult conversations? Do you get anxious when you have them? I mean, you're having them consistently.
Look, nobody loves to have difficult conversations. I don't think. I certainly don't. I don't shy away from them because I feel like the quicker you have those conversations, the better it is for both parties. I also find that most of the time, the person you're approaching wants to have that conversation anyway. They just don't know how to.
Exactly. Right?
So, you know, where did it come from? I think it's just from experiences of having them. Not necessarily me being the person that has to have them with other people, but a lot of people have had to have different difficult conversations with me over the years, right? As you know, a kid growing up and making mistakes or part of sports teams or, you know, like I said, other companies. I've had difficult conversations with my father over work, right? And I think he's taught me that way of how to approach it, not in a demeaning way, but in a way of like, look, these are the facts. Like, we're talking about facts. This isn't about how I feel about you as a person. This isn't personal, but let's lay out the facts, right? And I think if you could get yourself around, your head around that, and again, like, I hate to bring up spirits again, but like the content, I was going in a different difficult conversation a few months ago, and I actually watched, do you remember, was it Jen Goggins? I'm trying to think who it was.
Well, Dan does one.
Was it Dan?
Yeah, his okay. was so good. Yeah.
So it was Dan, and it really helped me prepare for that, right? But that's a great example of using tools.
Right.
Right. We're not out here on our own. We're part of a team, right? So like, why not use resources to try to, you know, help things like difficult conversations?
Well, right, because people avoid them otherwise.
Sure.
Because to your point, they don't know how. And so they end up not self-advocating.
Right.
And then that's when you see them leaving your workforce.
Right.
Because they didn't have the voice to ask for what they need.
Right.
And, you know, to maybe be uncomfortable for a minute in a difficult conversation, get through that one, and then the next one is easier.
And then they leave with a, you know, some sort of distorted story of what really happened,
yeah,
versus just having the conversation and figuring out a common path for it.
Well, yeah, the anxiety causes the distortion, though.
Right.
So it's just this difficult circle for
yep.
people
yep.
because, you know, if you're not present in that conversation, you're literally not present in that conversation. That's what happens to a lot of people, I think, when they go to have a hard conversation in the workplace.
Absolutely.
Or they don't do it at all.
Right. And then it just snowballs into a bigger effect.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think it's a major point right now in terms of the two things we just hit, right? Work-life balance. It absolutely is important, but it's got to be a give and a take for both the company and person and difficult conversations. I think those two, if there's two takeaways from this episode, I would say like those are things that we all can constantly work on, right? And constantly learn from each other, find unique tools, and try to better ourselves that way, because I think that'll go a long way.
You know, I really agree that those are keys to resilience and staying in an organization. And I will say, I look around at my colleagues in the company, and so many have been here a decade, two decades. Mm-hmm. I mean, you truly have some sort of magic to employee retention. And I'm really glad that you shared your mentality around that because, you know, also as you shared, you're going through your own growth
mm-hmm.
and learning and development through all of this as well. And then, you know, going and passing that on. So if there's one, is there anything else you would want to pass on to listeners about resilience in the workplace, work-life balance, difficult conversations, all the good stuff?
I'll leave it at this, because you've heard me say this a lot too, is be a part of the solution, not the problem, right? Because
it's gold.
I mean, but it's true. And we all have things that we can complain about. We all have our own challenges and inner struggles. We all have, things that aren't going perfectly, but we also have the ability to kind of affect change. And as long as those ideas and those thoughts are brought up in like a constructive manner, then that's awesome, right? And if we could do that together, then there doesn't have to be this uncomfortable situation. It leads back to difficult conversations, but be a part of the problem or part of the solution, not the problem. And I think that everybody kind of pulls resilience and work-life balance and difficult conversations together. And I think things take care of itself.
It does. When you simplify it like that, it's so helpful, because that's really the crux of all of it.
Yeah.
You know? So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This
was
great.
Yeah.
And I look forward to co-hosting with you going forward.
I know. Mike's coming in. He's going to be hosting a few episodes.
Yeah.
So look out for him coming soon.
Thank you.
What a great conversation today with Mike about resilience in the workplace. If you like this content, please like, comment, or share to a colleague or friend. And please visit www.spearandswellness.com to learn more about our great work with preventative mental health within organizations. Thank you.